You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, go on a journey of discovery and visit the lakes of Wisconsin. Kate Archer Kent talks to the author of A Lakeside Companion tomorrow morning at 6 on the Ideas Network. Now, some analysts say they're worried about a new arms race between the U.S. and Russia after both countries pulled out of a Cold War missile agreement last week. The U.S. announced its withdrawal from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, saying Russia has been violating the terms for years. Russia says it's been in compliance and that if the U.S. is done with the treaty, Russia is out too. Meanwhile, during this week's State of the Union address, President Trump said he would meet again with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un at the end of the month. The talks are part of the administration's effort at nuclear disarmament in that country. Sarah Krebs is a professor of government and adjunct professor of law at Cornell University and an Air Force veteran. She's also the author of Taxing Wars, The American Way of War Finance, and The Decline of Democracy. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, can you start by telling us about this treaty on intermediate range nuclear missiles between the U.S. and Russia?
Right. So during the Cold War, there was a growing sense, you know, especially the 80s, that the nuclear apocalypse may be nigh. And so especially, I think, given the rapport between Reagan and Gorbachev, they initiated a series of arms control agreements. And so this was one in a series that was negotiated, concluded, and ratified during the 1980s. And it's been in place, obviously, for several decades now. And so I think there's been a lot of sort of hand-wringing among the non-proliferation community about what this means that the U.S. has withdrawn from the treaty. And so I can understand that there are a lot of concerns about what this means for non-proliferation, you know, not just between the United States and Russia, but sort of the ripple effects beyond.
And on the American side, people have been saying, well, Russia is in violation of this treaty, so it's a pretense to stay in it. Is that accurate? Has Russia been in violation of the terms of that treaty?
Well, they have, and this is something that the Obama administration had identified several years ago and they had put into writing. And what I think this gets at is just different philosophies about how to sort of exert power and influence in international relations, and whether you do that sort of from the inside of an organization or treaty or that you do that from the outside. And one perspective would suggest that by staying in a treaty that is fatally flawed, all you're doing is legitimizing a bad agreement, and that the best way to do it is to withdraw and negotiate a new agreement that sort of is more consistent and compatible with where these two countries are today. And I think that that's sort of the theory, such as it is, that the Trump administration is operating on. I mean, I would just add, too, that, and this is sort of a bigger question in a way, is that, you know, it reminds me of what President Bush did early in his administration when he withdrew from the ABM treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. And, you know, what that did is it set the stage for actually arguably a more solid treaty in 2002, the Moscow Treaty between the United States and Russia, that, you know, arguably was the result of a sort of strengthened bargaining hand because the U.S. has withdrawn from the ABM treaty. So I think that this may be, you know, if I could sort of ascribe the word strategy to it, it could be a strategy that the Trump administration has envisioned.
Along those lines, President Trump mentioned this during his State of the Union address. Here's Alyssa.
Perhaps we can negotiate a different agreement, adding China and others, or perhaps we can't, in which case we will outspend and out-innovate all others by far.
So let's take that one piece at a time. The idea that, okay, forget this bilateral agreement. We need to negotiate with Russia and China and maybe others. Is it easier, harder to have more than two parties at the table to negotiate an intermediate nuclear weapons treaty?
Well, so I think that there's an obvious trade-off between kind of the effectiveness and the difficulty of negotiating that treaty. So, I mean, I will say I think there's a valid point that a treaty between the U.S. and Russia is an anachronism given the rising power of China. So if one thinks that this is a proliferation issue, then the key players need to be involved and China needs to be involved. Now, it's a different story to see how you can actually negotiate that kind of agreement, but there is an argument to be made that China should be part of any major nuclear agreement of that nature.
And part two of that statement, if we don't negotiate this multilateral agreement, we can win, we can outspend and out-innovate in effect, I guess, in arms race. Is that true? Could we?
Well, I mean, I don't want to sort of be flip about this, but I mean, the U.S. already spends $700 billion on defense every year. So it's outspending essentially every other country combined on defense. So, I mean, I guess the answer is yes. I don't think it needs to increase spending to achieve that because it's already achieving that. But it does also sort of sound reminiscent of the Cold War, the sort of Reagan military buildup will just outspend them. And, you know, there are debates about whether that's what brought the end of the Cold War or other factors. But I think that's probably what he's thinking when he makes that kind of statement. But I do find it sort of interesting, too, that somewhat puzzling strategy about kind of what it means to be withdrawing from some of the international commitments that the U.S. is making, but also meanwhile promising to spend far more money. So I think that there are some interesting and potential incompatibilities here.
Talking to Sarah Krebs, professor at Cornell University, about nuclear weapons treaties as the U.S. and Russia withdraw from one three-decade-old treaty on intermediate-range nuclear weapons. Sarah, can you talk about this particular category of weapon a little bit and how people see it as a threat in terms of nuclear war and as a deterrent?
Well, so I think, again, during the Cold War, there were various classes of nuclear weapons, and without getting too much into the weeds on any of this, I mean, I think the key thing is that this was a category of nuclear weapons that was seen to be destabilizing for both sets of parties, and, you know, so they had, you know, SALT was a strategic arms limitation talks, SALT 1, SALT 2, and then sort of a series of agreements in the in that Reagan era of the 80s. And this was meant to be sort of that intermediate range nuclear forces agreement that would address that category.
Now, as a kid in the 80s, nuclear war seemed like this very present threat. The day after movie, TV movie,
right,
scared the heck
right.
out of all of us.
Reagan, I might add.
Right, yeah, definitely. Now, this was a looming issue. Are we not paying enough attention to it now? We still have lots of nuclear weapons in the hands of maybe not adversaries, but rival countries around the world.
Well, so again, I think this is sort of underlying the strategy, if you will, of withdrawing from the agreement in the sense that if you think about it, the major arms control agreements in the Cold War were between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. And the geostrategic sort of landscape looks so different today. I mean, so again, you can't have an effective agreement that doesn't include the rising China. And so I think that there has to be some consideration given to that changing landscape. How to actually carry that out, I think, is a very different story, just given China's reticence in international organizations, international treaties, its tendency to think in terms of kind of non-intervention, sort of protection of sovereignty kinds of things. I mean, so I think you see this, one of the other issues I work on quite a bit is drones. And so the major agreement that regulates the transfer of drones is the MTCR, the Missile Control Treaty Regulation, MTCR. And that was actually a Cold War treaty that was meant, the late 80s also, it was meant to regulate the transfer of technologies that could be used as nuclear delivery devices. Well, drones were considered one of those. So, but China's not in that agreement either. And yet China's one of the major producers and exporters of drones. And so I think there are a lot of agreements like this that, you know, are somewhat anachronistic given that China is a major player today.
Have there been efforts in the current administration, previous administrations, to negotiate directly with China over nuclear weapon-related issues?
So, you know, they've been part of the multilateral negotiations like the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty that failed in the 1990s. So they're sort of part of multilateral agreements, but not as much sort of the of course, they're part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The NPT is one of the nuclear countries. So they are a part of some, but they haven't been sort of as integral to the more contemporary ones. And for some reason, and again, this might just be an anachronism, that these major treaties have been between the U.S. and Russia. I mean, in some ways, it still makes sense. China has, let's say, 200 in its arsenal compared to about the 1,500 that the U.S. and Russia have. So still, as a percentage, China is comparatively low. But I think as sort of the total number combined with their rising power, it really behooves the international community, especially Russia and the United States, to start incorporating them into these negotiations.
We're talking about nuclear weapons with Sarah Krebs. She's a professor of government and adjunct professor of law at Cornell University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the U.S. and then Russia pulling out of this particular treaty, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty? How concerned are you about a new nuclear arms race? In just a few minutes, we'll talk about North Korea as well. What do you make of the president's handling of North Korean issues? And do you have a question about all this stuff for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about recent nuclear weapons news with Sarah Krebs, professor of government and adjunct professor of law at Cornell University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the collapse of a nuclear weapons treaty between the U.S. and Russia? Do you have questions about what's going on in Korea? President Trump saying he's going to meet again with the leader of North Korea. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's turn to North Korea. President Trump, as we mentioned in the State of the Union address, saying he would hold a second meeting with Kim Jong-un, North Korean leader. That's scheduled to happen at the end of the month in Vietnam. Here's the president talking about progress in North Korea.
Our hostages have come home. Nuclear testing has stopped. And there has not been a missile launch in more than 15 months. If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea.
Sarah, what do you make of the current state of negotiations between the U.S. and North Korea over the nuclear program in North Korea?
Well, I think it's progress. In the sense that this time last year, I did a screening of last year's State of the Union with my undergrads, and they said, "Professor, are we going to war with North Korea?" And I was, I was actually not fearful of that prospect, but I think there was this sense that there would be kind of an imminent war with North Korea, and yet I think what we see today is progress towards. I wouldn't go so far as denuclearization. I think that's a fairly ambitious outcome that I don't think anyone can attain. But I think sitting down with this leader and trying to make moves toward at least more transparent and controlled, regulated situation is clearly progress. And I think he's moved in that direction. I think in the interim time since the Singapore summit last year, there have been a lot of negotiations going on behind the scenes. It's obviously hard to see what those are, but my sense and my understanding talking to people who are familiar with that world is that they've been making incremental progress. It's setting the groundwork for the meeting later this month.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Adam is with us in Madison. Adam, hi.
Hi. Yeah, it's a question about technology and regulations about very accurate GPS and who has access to that and how much access and just how that plays into this. I mean, I imagine it's very important because you would need high quality GPS, and then countries have control over certain satellites. So I'm just curious about your thoughts.
Adam, thanks for the call, Sarah. That's not a connection I was familiar with, but GPS satellites and I guess missile targeting, is that something you're tracking?
No pun intended, right?
No, actually.
So that's interesting in the sense that one thing that I think some observers thought that Trump would talk about the other night was his proposed Space Force. And I think that sort of plugs into that proposal for the Space Force in a way, which is sort of this sense that we need better protection of kind of the satellites and better control of that. I guess it's all sort of part and parcel of the same thing. I'm not clear as to sort of how that can be regulated and controlled. I mean, I think it ties into a lot of concerns, which, you know, whether it's the control, I mean, I just mentioned drones. Obviously, these GPS satellites, I mean, if they sort of get hacked into, are a major vulnerability for a country like the United States.
Thanks for the call, Adam. We'll go now to Scott in Wausau. Scott, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Great show. I was just wondering if you could comment on the use of tactical nuclear weapons in a conventional war mm-hmm. setting. There was an article, mm-hmm. actually a mm-hmm. full magazine by Foreign Affairs that talked about this, that Russia and even China may use a tactical nuclear weapon in a conventional war setting, such as a bombing a U.S. base. And would the United States deter, or would they proceed with a full-scale nuclear attack if that would occur? It kind of goes into, are we willing to risk the entire world on one small nuclear attack versus a large scale? I don't know if you can comment on that.
Yeah, well, it's a good question, because when the Trump administration released the nuclear posture review last year, there was a move toward kind of resuscitating tactical nuclear weapons to kind of keep, you know, there are a number of ways in which, you know, we're hearing themes of kind of a revived arms race, Cold War situation. And that comment you just heard about, we're going to outspend them, is one of those. But this is another, which is Russia has always had an advantage on the tactical nuclear weapon side. I mean, always, in all of these historical arms control treaties, there was always that concern. Well, what about Russia's or Soviet Union's tactical nuclear arsenal? They still have that advantage. And in this NPR, the Nuclear Posture Review, there was this move to kind of renew the U.S. interest to make nuclear weapons more usable. And the concern is that if you don't have tactical, sort of these battlefield nuclear weapons, you have unusable nuclear arsenal, because it's too high yield. And there's a sense that, well, you can't use a large-scale nuclear weapon in a battlefield setting. And therefore, all of deterrence falls apart if they don't believe that you would actually use a nuclear weapon. So therefore, you need to go lower level. You can see, though, how this all of sort of the stability unravels if now suddenly we're seeming as though we're putting nuclear weapons in play. So that line between deterrence and usability in a sort of destabilizing sense becomes very thin. And I think that's, in the non-proliferation community, sort of the concern about making nuclear weapons more usable by going tactical is that double-edged sword, where it does make them more usable and deterrent, but also the usability also increases the risk of a sort of a large-scale confrontation.
Scott, thanks a lot for that call. Sarah, in our last couple minutes, we've talked a lot about the U.S. and Russia. You've talked about China some, North Korea. Are there other parts of the world that you're paying close attention to when it comes to nuclear weapons proliferation and possible use?
Well, I think the one that gets a lot of attention is Iran. And so that's one where I think the administration has been taking a sort of harder line, a much harder line than we had seen with the Obama administration, obviously withdrawing from the Iran agreement, and sort of this sense that we can't, that they're sort of not complying. And, you know, I think this raises some questions of consistency in a way, which is, you know, the U.S. is engaging in these negotiations with North Korea, and there's some question about whether we can verify steps toward denuclearization. And if one buys that argument that you can suppress and verify, then why is there not that view with respect to Iran? I think that hasn't been clearly articulated, other than perhaps that the Middle East is just sort of idiosyncratic and different, and that the sort of threat of Iran having nuclear weapons in a region with Israel, you know, close ally Israel, just makes the stakes higher.
Does pulling out briefly of the Iran treaty make it more or less likely, though, that Iran ends up with those nuclear weapons?
So, I think it depends on who you talk to. My own view is that being in an agreement with them where we have some sort of grounds for verification and inspections is a better place to be than having withdrawn from the treaty and having no leverage at all.
Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks. It was great to be here.
Sarah Krebs is a professor of government and adjunct professor of law at Cornell University. We talked with her about the U.S. and Russia pulling out of a decades-old nuclear weapons treaty, along with other global nuclear developments in places like North Korea and Iran. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, a new Bloomberg Business Report shows a lot of downside for Wisconsin's deal with the technology company Foxconn. We'll have the investigative reporter behind that piece with us on the show. He'll tell us what he found, what he's hearing from people in the industry, and you can share your questions and reactions along the way. There are large-scale efforts to turn the tide on opioid addiction in the United States. But our guest says the crackdown is hurting patients with serious chronic pain. She's a chronic pain sufferer herself. She advocates for people with chronic pain, and she says people who need opioid medications to function on a daily basis aren't getting them. We'll hear her story. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. If the cold weather has you down, try baking some bread. Our guest baker helps us get started with advice for the first-time bread maker and answers your questions. Who knows, maybe they'll even get me to finally try my hand at bread baking. I wouldn't count on it, but if you want to make some and bring it in for me, I will gladly eat that fresh bread. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show. Tomorrow at 7, Kate Archer-Kent and her guests take a look at President Trump's policies on tariffs and how they're affecting American businesses and consumers. That's tomorrow at 7 on the morning show. Up next, it's news for NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then, these days, we're quick to occupy our kids with a phone app or some other form of entertainment, but our guest says we might benefit with a little less excitement and that we should let children get bored. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.